Welcome back to the Puckett Pod. On today's episode, we discuss more NHL news, the CFL playoffs, and finally, we discuss our favorite movie music. That's all coming up next right here on the Puckett Pod. Let's fucking go. All right, we're back for another episode. Boys, how are we feeling today?
I think we're feeling pretty good. How about you, Paul? How are you doing?
Doing great. Can't complain. I'm enjoying the holidays that are going to come up very soon here.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get right into it. We've got lots to talk about tonight. Let's talk a little bit about the NHL.
Yeah, so we've had a couple of things happen, obviously, over the last few weeks here. A couple of waiver claims. James Reimer was claimed by the Buffalo Sabres after Lukanen went down to an injury.
Who hasn't claimed James Reimer?
Yeah, he's been all
over
the NHL.
Has he played for 30 out of the 32 teams? I'm pretty sure.
He has not played for Vancouver, I can tell you that much. I don't think he's played for the Oilers. Has he played for Calgary?
No, I don't know.
Really? So I think out of the Pacific teams, maybe San Jose is the only team he's played for. But yeah, he's definitely been all over the place. He's probably been to every division. Probably.
You know, give credence to that. He still has some relevance, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Kaapo Kähkönen was claimed by the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously to help with some depth for their team as well. Mm-hmm. I remember when he was kind of the big thing in Minnesota, and he just really hasn't had much star power, I guess, since.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's kind of interesting. Some players can be really streaky, and that's kind of a common theme in the NHL is like some players, like 1 year they're great, then the next year all of a sudden they've lost that intensity, they've lost that confidence, and it's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes sometimes.
We had a trade that did happen. The Vancouver Canucks did trade Daniel Sprong to the Seattle Kraken. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Yeah, I think it was a necessary move. I mean, Daniel Sprong, as good of an offensive player he is, he brings speed. He does have hands. I will say he only has the one goal this season so far, which was the first goal that he scored for the Canucks this season. He's not a talk-up player. He can't bring that defensive, you know, skill that he's supposed to have when it comes to the Canuck hockey. So I think it's the right move, clearing that space for new players to come up from the AHL, for, you know, a player like Dakota Joshua who's expected to come back. You know, I think it's the right move for the team.
Yeah, you gotta make space, and if he's not gonna fit, right, you look at Timothy Liljegren with the Leafs. He didn't fit. He needed to go, and I
you
guess
need
that's
to, you know, in today's NHL, you need to be reactive. And when a player, and I think, again, you know, we talked before about making a decision on a player that you think doesn't work, you know, that's the right thing to do, especially early on in the season.
Yeah, you're creating your identity for the season. You have
that's
to.
That's right, yeah.
So the fact that, obviously, you're looking at Vancouver had traded Sprong, you know, what kind of moves can you tell me that were made to kind of fill in the spots?
Yeah, it's so, like I said, you know, Dakota Joshua is a player we're expecting to come back. This is a very physical player. This is somebody who also brings an offensive kind of touch to his game as well. You know, but as we're recording this, he's supposed to be coming back very, very soon. So it's exciting to get that player back, but in the meantime, while we're waiting for him to come back, there's other players that are being brought up from the AHL. The most exciting player is probably their number one prospect. That's Jonathan Lekkerimäki. He is what you would call, so what a Canuck fan would call him is sort of like a Swedish Brock Besser. He's got a really strong shot. He's really good on his feet as well. Really good hands. He played his first game the other night and looked really good. He did not look out of place. In fact, he looked so good that Rick Tocchet put him on PP1. So on day one, he's playing PP1 to replace Brock Besser, basically, to be that bumper shot. So it was really exciting to see. And there wasn't a specific moment where I felt like he didn't belong on the NHL team.
Now, was that on the Flames game that he
That was played? Against the Flames, yeah. They won 3-1 in that game. He did not register a point, but he was very effective in what he brought to the team. So it was really exciting.
Do you think it was preemptive, or do you think he's ready?
Oh, I think he's ready. Yeah. I think he was ready at the beginning of the season. I think really it's one of those situations where, you know, the team is in such a good position that it's kind of like a let him cook situation. And that's exactly what they did. They put him out in the AHL so that he could get some points, get some confidence. And I believe that's exactly what happened.
So Besser's out right now, still.
Yeah, Besser's out with well, we don't know necessarily if it's a concussion. They're calling it an upper body injury, which is what they typically do. But we know exactly what happened.
That was the hit at the blue line, right?
That's right. That was the Tanner Janot hit.
Yeah, that was about 5 games ago, eh?
Yeah.
So my question to you is, are there a lot of forward spots that are kind of up for grabs right now still? Or did that, you know, like the trade of Daniel Sprong out kind of alleviate some of that?
It alleviated some of that. There were already around 2 spots that they were kind of utilizing because of Dakota Joshua not playing as well. There was, they brought up Atu Ratu, who is playing, who plays a really good defensive game. He's actually really, really good on the faceoffs. Which was impressive, something that I really like to see. They also had Archdeep Baines, who came up from the AHL as well to play, and he's got some speed and he's got some skill as well. The only thing he's missing, I feel like, is just that IQ to be in the right place at the right time. So this time around, when I say this time around, I mean the time that we're recording as we speak, he's not with the team. They called up today. So what they've been doing is they've been doing paper transactions, more along the lines of just alleviating cap space. But the paper transactions included sending players like Lekera Mäki, Artur Shelovs, Atu Ratu back down to the AHL. And then the next day, they'll bring them back up again to alleviate certain cap space rules and things like that. But this time around, they didn't bring back Baines. He's still with the AHL club in hopes that he'll get some games with them and maybe grow that confidence again.
Dakota Joshua.
Yeah, I'm excited to have him back. It's going to be really awesome to have that physical forward to go alongside somebody like Kiefer Sherwood, who's already bringing that physical game. He's the leader in hits right now in the NHL, which we expected him to be a hitter. We didn't expect him to be this good of a hitter this early. And he brings an offensive style too. He's scoring goals as well, so it's exciting. I'm hoping Joshua can do exactly what Sherwood's doing, so that we can have that extra kind of beef, maybe on 2 separate lines, maybe on the same line. Who knows? It could be really exciting.
Is he close to returning?
Yes. As we record this, he is supposed to be playing tonight.
I was gonna say, because I thought that he'd already been playing. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With his cap hit, the fact that he was signed to the contract that he was, and the type of game that he plays, the fact that he was injured, is there concerns, obviously, for the long term with his contract?
To be fair, it's the injury, quote-unquote, that we're talking about with Dakota Joshua is actually testicular cancer. So he had testicular cancer. It was removed, so he's cancer-free, which is wonderful. It's just the recovery phase and everything that we had to deal with. So it's really, this is day one for him. And as fans, we're excited to see what can happen.
Considering the fact that Silas had, you know, quite the playoff that he did, you know, this past season. Is there concerns the fact that he started out the season the way that he has, and that now that he's been demoted?
I would say yes, there's concerns for sure. I mean, the way we look at it, we're seeing somebody like Kevin Lankinen come in and be a starter. And the guy is incredible. He's one of the best goalies in the league at the moment, just based on his save percentage and his goals against average. But you know, you expect that out of Shelovs as well. In fact, we all thought Shelovs was going to be the starter and Lankinen would be the backup. It's turned out to be the other way around. In Shelovs' case, though, I think really what it comes down to is just a matter of getting experience and getting more games. Because when you're just sitting on the bench game after game, you can't improve your game at that point. So there was a moment where they ended up calling up They called up Ty Mueller and let Shelovs play a game in the AHL. So they basically reversed roles. And Shelovs ended up winning that game. So it was nice to see that he got to play some hockey. But they've called up Shelovs back again, but Lankinen's still getting those starting minutes. So the Canucks do have a back-to-back coming up, which is their first so far this season. And it does look like Shelovs will probably get a game here. So it's just a matter of how the team plays in front of him more than anything.
So what is your opinion on the Pacific division. The reason I ask is that I would say probably 4 or 5 episodes ago, we had talked about how Calgary started on fire. Well, they've kind of tailed, right?
Yeah, they've kind of leveled out.
So right now they're sitting fourth in the Pacific. We won't mention who's in fifth place because we want Joe to continue recording with us. But, you know, Vegas, Los Angeles, right at the top of the division. Canucks are right there, and they have games in hand, too. So what's your comfortability like? What's your assessment so far?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Vancouver right now, as we speak, as we record this podcast again, they're only sitting 2 points behind Los Angeles and 3 points behind Vegas. And they have many games at hand. Right now, Vancouver's only played, as we speak this moment, they've only played 14 games. So they've got, you know, a back-to-back this weekend. They are playing tonight as we speak. So a lot can happen over this next few days, which could elevate them to top of the Pacific again. And I think that's what we're going to see throughout most of the season this year, specifically in the Pacific Division. I think that Vancouver will remain one of the stronger teams in the Pacific. I think they're better than Los Angeles. I definitely think they're better than Vegas. There are teams like Edmonton, who I think we can look at as probably going to be one of the heavier contenders. It's probably going to be between them and Vancouver in terms of who wins the Pacific this year. So it's kind of exciting to see what can happen. For me as a fan, my thought process here is I just hope Vancouver can put together, you know, 50 minutes of hockey consistently night in, night out, so that they actually get the winning done that they're supposed to be doing. The biggest problem, ironically, and it's very similar to what you guys were talking about the other episode with the Leafs, in that Vancouver can't seem to get their defense structure down.
Yeah.
It feels like last year Vancouver had this specific structure that was really impenetrable when it came to teams being able to score against Vancouver, where it was really, really hard. And then, you know, you'd have coaches after the games being like, that was a really hard team to play against. This year, it feels like kind of scrambly, where it's like sometimes they've got the defensive structure down, and then they just collapse all of a sudden. And then the other team gets a really, really high danger chance, and you're kind of just like, what is happening? Like, why isn't that guy covering the player he's supposed to be covering? Like, what's going on? So you got to wonder what's different this year versus last year to get that collapse.
Well, I don't doubt it was most concerning, obviously, the 6-0 loss to the Devils. Now, they're being coached really good this year by Keith, the former Leafs coach. But I can imagine, you know, from what I saw from that game, that those structure breakdowns were very apparent.
I think that's a combination of both structure breakdowns defensively, but also, like, there's no real danger chances that Vancouver's taking advantage of offensively either. So, like, that game in particular, you know, you're throwing shots against Markstrom. Markstrom's doing really well goaltending, but B, Vancouver's not really challenging him either. They're not making a move side to side. They're not doing anything to like really open up the net to give them that opportunity, right? I compare that to, say, the game against Calgary, where they're able to make Dustin Wolf move side to side and open the net. Like, the first goal that they scored, that Pettersson scored in the Calgary game, which is the most recent game, it was a beautiful passing play that he tapped in to score the goal, right? They weren't able to do stuff like that against New Jersey because I felt like maybe they didn't have the confidence to do it. And maybe that's a compliment to New Jersey's defensive style too.
Well, and it's kind of funny and interesting because I, you know, obviously I'm a Flames fan, and I look at the situation with the Devils where the Devils played the Canucks one night, mm-hmm. played the Flames the next night. Yeah, it was the next night, and the Flames beat them 3-0. So the Canucks lost 6-0 to the Devils, but the Flames beat them.
I think that's more of a problem of consistency more than anything, right? Yeah. Like, obviously New Jersey wasn't consistent enough to play the same game they played against Vancouver, but also Vancouver had a bad enough game that it made them look good too. So, and it's the same thing when you compare the game they played against Edmonton, where Edmonton beats them 7-3 because Vancouver just basically stopped defending after they started scoring the 4-2 goal or something like that. Vancouver basically stopped skating. And so that at that point, I turned the channel. I stopped watching the game because if you're not going to try and you're not going to put the effort forward, it's not worth me watching either, you know? And that's how I felt.
Interestingly enough, just to throw a little bit of Leafs banter in there, I find with Toronto, it's always the opposite. it's always like for two periods they don't do anything, and then they try to turn it on when it's too late.
It's actually very similar, because with Vancouver, one of the things that has been happening specifically this season is the other team is dictating the play first when they start playing, when the game starts. So Vancouver, I believe as of the last game against Calgary, Vancouver has given up the first goal 8 times this season so far, which is a lot when you consider they played 14 That's games.
65% of their games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for you to basically play that style where you're letting them dictate the play and then you take over, that's a really kind of frustrating play style for a fan to cheer for, right?
Well, yeah, and you can sit there and you can be happy at the fact that your team can come back in the games, and they're proving that,
mm-hmm.
but that's not going to last through an entire NHL season, right? That's not going to last in the playoffs.
You
can't be behind.
You cannot do that in the playoffs. No. You can't.
I find it funny, again, doing a bit of, we're talking about Leafs and Canucks comparisons. The Canucks seem to like dominate and do really well against teams that are considered, I guess, maybe not playoff teams, you know, near the bottom of standings,
mm-hmm.
struggle a little bit against contenders and some of the higher standing teams. It seems to be the exact opposite with the Leafs sometimes, where they struggle against teams that are probably not playoff
weaker
bound,
teams, yeah,
but they seem to do really well against teams that are, you know, higher in the standings. You know, do you think it's an effort issue in regards to you know, the Canucks put in their effort against the harder teams compared to the Leafs, who just, you know, they don't show up because they think they have all the skill in the world to beat the lower place teams?
Well, I think more than anything, it's an energy thing. So like the Leafs, for example, they bring it against stronger teams because they're matching that compete level, right? Whereas weaker teams, it's almost like they're waiting for them to make the mistake.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the mentality. I think that's coaching more than anything, to be honest. Because coaches need, it's a coach's job to basically make sure the team is ready to play at the beginning of the game. And when they're not ready to play at the beginning of the game, that's the coaches. And the coaches will say that in interviews, right? Like I've heard Tockett say it 100 times. He's like, that's on me. They should have been ready to play, but they weren't. The one benefit I will say for Vancouver is that when they're, most of the time this season, when they're behind, they're able to come back. You know, unless it's against, you know, New Jersey, who won 6-0, or Edmonton, who won 7-3. So it's just a matter of finding that energy and finding that compete to dictate the play first, right?
I won't lie, Hughes has looked amazing so far this season.
Yeah, I feel like he's going for the Norris again this year, just the way he's playing. He's, like, bringing it. It's one thing to be able to score goals, but it's just, like, how he's scoring the goals and how he's, you know, getting those assists and the way he controls the puck, the way he moves his feet, like...
The way he controls the game.
Yeah, like, yeah. He literally does. He can put the team on his back and, like, make things happen.
I thought watching him a little more last year than previous... And seeing the progress that he's made consistently year after year. And I thought, wow, you know, just the season he had last year, I'm thinking that's probably going to be Quinn Hughes now for the next whatever. It's not.
Yeah.
He's beyond that even.
Yeah.
And he's going to be beyond
that.
And
I think
right?
a lot of the things that elevated him specifically too was giving him the captaincy, because now he has that responsibility almost to make sure that he plays better, or to make sure that he kind of leads by example, right? Which is a very Sedin thing. Like that's something he's gotten from the city.
He's the guy. He's got to be the guy now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee possibly all three Hughes being on the Four Nations Cup for USA?
Oh, 100%. There's no doubt in my mind. He's probably already been talked to by them. Yeah.
Him well, and his brothers?
This would be all three
yeah.
of them.
Yeah. Maybe not all three. Maybe not Luke. I don't know yet. Luke, to me, hasn't shown enough compared to those two, but definitely Jack and Quinn for sure. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I we'll get into it in a further episode, but I'm really curious to discuss the Four Nations tournament coming up.
Yeah.
I really can't wait for that.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be fun. So obviously we've talked about Hughes and winning the Norris and the fact that, you know, major award.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a couple of other players in the league that won, you know, MVP, you know, some of the other major awards in the league. What do you think about McDavid? I know that you don't like the Oilers, but what do you think about McDavid hanging 1,000
Okay,
points?
So before you get into that, let me just explain to the audience so they understand what's going on. I don't hate anybody in the league, okay? I don't hate anybody. Hate is a very strong word.
You don't?
Let me rephrase.
Let me give you my list.
Let me rephrase. Hate is a very strong word. I dislike the Oilers greatly, specifically this year. Now, the reason why is, of course, Vancouver played Edmonton in the playoffs last year. They obviously walked away and moved on to the Stanley Cup final, which is great for them. But This year, I find myself more and more frustrated with the way that McDavid seems to get away with murder out there. No disrespect to McDavid in terms of who he is as a player. He is one of the best players in the league. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I will refuse to say that he is the best player until he actually wins something. And I say this with the utmost respect of what he has already brought. You know, like you were saying, the achievement he's got here, that's great. That's wonderful. However, you cannot go through your career playing like Brad Marchand and have respect from everybody in the league. I'm sorry. The guy is getting away with murder out there. And so Vancouver just played Edmonton recently. Quinn Hughes gets a holding penalty against Connor McDavid right at the beginning of the game. That's fine. I'm not arguing the fact that Hughes did actually hold and cause a penalty. However, McDavid was holding his stick the whole time. Literally grabbed his stick, and Hughes is trying to do whatever to get the puck. I'm sorry, you got to call that. It's very obvious. The ref is standing in front of him. The very next game. Now, McDavid also did some other things throughout the game. Again, no calls. He never got one single penalty throughout that whole game. He's doing these things, but the refs are letting him get away with it. The Oilers play against the New York Islanders a couple of nights ago, and there's a specific moment where, so there was a player that McDavid was up against the boards with for the Islanders, who McDavid very obviously slides his stick under the guy's feet and trips him, and it's right in front of the ref, and the ref doesn't call it. McDavid then goes and scores a goal immediately after that. This is the thing that infuriates me as a fan. You cannot let players get away with murder just because of who they are. It doesn't make sense. To me, you want a league that calls fair calls, that makes everything equal, so that fans are not having this negative impact on the game, or it's not having, the game itself is not having a negative impact on fans. To me, that's infuriating. Now, let's talk about the achievement that you're about to bring up with McDavid.
So yes, McDavid just recently hit 1,000 points in his career.
Good for him.
you know, obviously you're talking about, your...
Whoopity-doo!
You're talking about, obviously, McDavid getting bias. You do see that with some other star players in other leagues, where you look at LeBron James. Basically, he kind of almost like runs that league at times, the way things kind of go with calls.
Not kind of. He does.
Yeah.
I mean, he demands people. He demands his team picks up players, and they do it because it's LeBron James.
Quite literally. I've seen the same with certain calls in baseball, especially gearing towards the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. You look at a guy like Aaron Judge. He's, it's a tall guy. He's got a large strike zone in regards to what should be called strikes, and he gets a lot of passes on some of the balls. I've watched them where it might be right on the edge, but a significant amount of the ball is inside and it's still called a ball. It's not a strike. And it's just surprising.
So let me ask you guys this. How far away are we from robot referees?
It better never happen. I don't want to see that crap.
Yeah, honestly, there does have to be a human factor, I think, when it comes to sports.
I specifically think baseball in this perspective because I was an umpire, and I did it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed my craft. I worked at my craft. I trained for my craft. I studied my craft. And there's so much that goes into it that people don't realize. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about sitting there pounding at the gym, like, to raise your arm and hit the hammer, you're out, or strike. Like, you don't have to work out for that. But it's literally, like, the mechanics, mm-hmm. your positioning, certain situations. Like, officials have places they have to be, right? But they still have to be involved in the game. Things happen. Umpires get hit with a ball, and they don't get an out. They try to dump it in hockey to go chase it in overtime, and it hits the linesman's skate, bounces right out into center ice to get a breakaway. It happens.
Yeah.
That's part of the game. But I'm not generally one of those people who will harp on the referees. I don't think there's a bias. I don't think there's an integrity issue in any sport. Now, I think things happen behind the scenes, makeup calls.
Yeah.
Like, now you're going to get into that discussion. Yes, I think they happen.
I put out a YouTube video in 2010 on my YouTube channel talking about a specific moment between Alex Burrows and a referee named Stéphane Auger. any Canuck fan will remember this specific guy, but there's a specific moment where the Canucks were playing Nashville, and I believe it was Nashville, and Auger, at the beginning of the game when they're doing the little warm-up skate and stuff, like just as the players came out, Auger comes up to Burrows and he's talking to him. The camera picks up. You can read his lips. And he says, "I'm going to get you back."
I remember that.
It was literally because Auger, I guess the previous game the Canucks had played was refereeing. And I guess he called a penalty against another player on something Alex Burrows did, where I guess he said he dove or whatever. Alex Burrows dove, caused the penalty. And he said, like, "You embarrassed me. I'm going to get you back for that," basically. Which is like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, how did I embarrass you? It's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about the game, and it's about, you know, the play. I was furious as a fan because he cost them that game. It was phantom calls. He puts Nashville on the power play. They're scoring goals on the power play, which cost Vancouver the game, right? So it was, and he did it a couple of times that game, which was just frustrating to watch.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't happen, because I know that it does.
Yeah.
I'll give you a quick example before we move on. With me, when I used to umpire, there was times where you'll be set up and the pitcher will throw something that you don't expect. Maybe it'd be like, I used to umpire fastball, right? So we've got windmill pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the most effective pitches that they throw at a high level in fastball is called a rise ball.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, these pitches are coming in, and they're not only are they 30 feet closer than they are in baseball, but they're coming still. We're talking 100, 110 kilometers an hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been times where, as an umpire, you're standing there, and especially because you set up inside on the batter, the ball comes in, and it looks like it's going to be in the dirt. And even though it's a split second, you almost give up on it a little bit. And then at the last second, it rises 4 inches.
Yeah.
And boom, at the knees, which is supposed to be a strike, you sit there, you're kind of like, frozen.
Yeah.
And literally, you have conversations, and this rapport is good too, to have this, but you have conversations with the catcher. I've literally been umpiring a Western Canadian Championship for junior women. So we're talking age 18 and up.
Yeah.
And the catcher turned to me and said, "You missed that one, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. I'll get the next one."
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I'm going to call an egregious strike that's a foot outside, but I'm saying, you know, if you throw that pitch again, I won't miss it again.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of got to have that
report.
Yeah, that's right. So to summarize, I still would always give the integrity to the officials in the game. We know that doesn't always happen, but as a default, I will always do that.
Yeah, so when you're looking at, obviously, you're talking about the officiating and how important it is. It's a little bit concerning when you do have guys like Angel Hernandez and guys like Wes McCauley that it almost seems like they either have a bias for the team that's there, or just are not consistent at their job.
There's exceptions to the rule, and of course, as us as fans, especially ones like Angel Hernandez, for example, who over the years, it consistently happens.
Yeah.
And there's instances, like there's reports about it, and how you go, how does this guy still have a job?
Well, and that's kind of the kind of feeling I had when it came to that specific moment back in 2010, because when he's literally coming up to the player and saying, "You embarrassed me last game," now he's made it about himself, and "I'm going to get you back for that." Not only do you get him back for that in one penalty, there's a specific moment where Burrows goes up and he's trying to tip in a shot. So he goes up, there's a player, a defender in front of him. He kind of pushes him a little bit, not even push. It was literally didn't even touch him, like puts his stick out just to stop him from coming back at him. And the ref called, and Auger calls a penalty on him because he's there. And it's like, okay. And the in that moment, I wish we had video so I could literally show the replay of Burrows throwing his hands in the air when he calls the penalty, and he's covering his face like, "Are you kidding me, man? Like, this is obviously not a penalty." And I remember that moment, showing it on the big screen. You could hear the fans just being like, "Boo!" The whole place just insane. Like, just crazy. Like, how does he think he's going to... And of course, it's 2010, so it's a little different than, you know, than it is now. But when you're doing it so egregiously that it's... You've made it about yourself, basically, right? Like, that's the whole thing. But, you know, that's what I feel like is happening with McDavid right now. They're letting him get away with very obvious penalties and not calling it, and it's costing other teams, right? So it's just, it's frustrating because it does affect the integrity of the game itself.
You'd probably feel more positively about the other person that's got a milestone coming up here, and we've got Sidney Crosby approaching 600 goals. How do you both feel about that?
I mean, yeah, good for him. I don't hate Crosby. I think he's a great ambassador for the game. It's for me, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it.
I love Crosby. I think Crosby's the kind of player that, like, he's an amazing ambassador for the game. Yeah. When I think Crosby, I think Team Canada.
The golden goal.
Yeah, but not even that. Like, just the fact that, you know, he represents Canada. He represents Canada when he steps on the ice in Pittsburgh. Like, I feel that way. But not only that, like, he is one of the best players in the league. I think Crosby, I think McDavid, I think MacKinnon, I think, you know, I think Ovechkin, I think all sorts of players, like, have that ability to bring the game to another level. And it's like, it could happen at any time. And the thing about Crosby is he's got amazing hockey IQ. Amazing hockey IQ. He knows when to be at the right place at the right time. Yeah. His hands are incredible. He can tip in any shot thrown towards the net. You know, he's just,
backhand.
Yeah, like he knows. Crazy. He knows what to do and when to do it. And, you know, good on him.
So pardon my candidness. I've had a few seconds to think about it. And let me kind of explain my reaction. So Sidney Crosby is the same age as I am. He was drafted the year I graduated high school. And watching this player through his entire career, 600 goals to me is almost like he's not there yet. Like, this guy has accomplished and done so many things at an elite level for so long that, like, we're talking 19 seasons, right?
Yeah.
And how has it been 19 seasons?
I know. Where did the time go?
You know, the 2010 Olympics, three Stanley Cups now?
Yep.
You know, endless amounts of Art Ross trophies. And the guy's resume is so long. And for you to say, what do you think about Crosby hitting 600 goals? I'm kind of like, that might be last on his accomplishment. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, almost like you're like, he doesn't already have 600
kind
goals.
Kind of, yeah. That's kind of why I was like, when you hit me with that, I was like, I don't know. What's the big deal, right?
I mean,
because he's just, he has done so much. And he's not finished.
No.
Right? I mean, obviously, Pittsburgh's not in the place that they want to be.
Yeah.
And he's going to be there probably the rest of his career.
He'll finish his career as a Penguin,
right?
For sure.
But, I mean, the things that he's already done, the lives he's touched, you know, Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, where he's from. Can you imagine? Like, nobody had ever even heard of that place, probably.
Yeah.
Unless you were from Nova Scotia.
That's right.
And just, I don't know. He's done so much for the game that I really respect him, and I'm pumped for him. But, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, is another one of those players who, maybe not so much the last little while, probably because the Penguins haven't really been on the map, but I think of him as a whiner. Hmm. A lot like Connor McDavid, to be honest with you. He's always bitching about something. And it's just like, especially being in the same conference as Toronto, you see them 4 to 6 times a year, not even including playoffs, right? So to see the little things that happen and the little things that he gets away with, it's kind of, I don't feel as strongly about it as you do about McDavid, but kind of like the same thing to a lesser degree.
And honestly, like with the thing with McDavid is like, I feel like I only started feeling that way this year. Like last season, I didn't feel that way about McDavid at all. Maybe it's because we played them in the playoffs and now there's a rivalry, like a deeper rivalry. But it's just, I feel like I'm noticing it more now because of the playoffs that he's getting. Because he got away with murder in the playoffs too last year. There's a specific moment where he literally takes his stick and slashes Quinn Hughes in the face, and Quinn Hughes is bleeding, and they don't call a penalty on him. So, like, that kind of stuff, to get away with that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there's Oilers fans yelling at me, being like, you're an idiot, Canuck fans suck, blah, 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 blah. Okay, great, but that's just how I feel. I would feel that way about any other player if it was obvious that they were doing the exact same thing on any other team, right? And so, It's just, you know, for him to be the face of the NHL and to be able to do what he's doing, it just feels really wrong to me. And so that's why I have a hard time kind of appreciating McDavid in that way.
Yeah, you had to wonder with him, obviously, having missed that season half, how much further ahead he'd be too, right? You know, those kind of head injuries, sometimes you don't come back from. You see some of those guys with the concussions post-career. Like, you look at a guy like Wade Belak, you know.
Yeah.
He
rest
didn't stick
in peace.
Yeah, didn't stick around. I won't say for what reasons. You guys can look that up. But, you know, those head injuries can be really, really hard to deal with. And the fact that Crosby was able to pull through that and still be the star power
player
that
he is. Well, like three times too, right? Like, didn't he get three concussions in his career?
I believe so,
three,
yeah.
Bad ones?
Yeah, and they were all in that space of the time that he missed, too. You know, you look at a guy like Crosby, yeah, like you said, he's an ambassador for the game. I think of him even like when he was in his junior years and they were doing video interviews with him, and he was talking about how grateful he is to be a hockey player and that he could represent his country. And
I think that's why he will retire a Penguin.
Yeah, I totally think the same thing. There was at least that one point where they were a dynasty team, right? The same where Tampa had their dynasty point kind of thing. It helps build those memories. You'll never forget a player like that because of the influence he's had in the game, and especially when he won the championships. That's his all-time high.
So, you know, speaking a little bit about the Penguins, we were talking, you know, last episode a little bit about the fact that they're kind of on the downswing, it looks like, possibly going to be sort of selling off on the team a little bit. One player that I think may end up going to a contender, specifically for the Penguins, is Malkin.
Yeah.
I can see him going off to try to play, try to win a cup ultimately, because Malkin will be, if he does win a cup, will be the only Russian to ever win four Stanley Cups.
That's interesting. And I tend to agree that if the scenarios lined up, he would be the person to go.
Yeah.
But he also said yesterday that he doesn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh is his home. He signed a contract here for a reason.
Yes, yes.
He's there because of Sidney Crosby. You know, so it's interesting. It could be just, you know, saving face, etc.
Yeah, the question you have to ask is how much control does he actually have over that? Because ultimately, they're going to do whatever it takes to get that cap space back. They're going to do whatever it takes to start the rebuild as quickly as possible. And if that includes selling off Malkin, I think it's going to happen. To be fair, I think Malkin will be happy with wherever he ends up, because if he ends up winning a cup, then he's going to get that record that he's looking for.
Could you see him ending up with a Canadian team?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I don't necessarily think it's Vancouver. I don't think Vancouver has the cap space to make it happen. They would have to give up somebody like Brock Besser. They'd probably have to give up a goaltender, something like that. I'm not a fan of that idea. But yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe the Leafs, maybe Edmonton.
I don't think any of those two teams have cap space either.
There's
a team for me that I think that he will go to, and it is a Canadian team. And I think he'd be the perfect fit for them. Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are surprising right now. They are hungry. And I just got goosebumps and almost threw up in my mouth. but they look pretty good.
Yeah.
They look pretty good. I know they're not where they want to be. They're getting there,
yeah.
I think. But they're turning into a bit of a scary team.
Yeah.
It's just their effort level.
Now,
the
question I ask you then is, do you see it as somebody... Do you see them as a team to be feared throughout the season? Or do you see them as kind of going through a hot streak right now?
No, I think that they're a team that you need to be careful when you play them.
Mm.
Like, you cannot play down to them because you'll be embarrassed,
yeah.
I.e. Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they're a team that has been at the bottom for so long, and they've been slowly building. Then they take a step back, then two steps forward, then one step back. And right now, they seem to be primed to be in a position where they are just going to start moving up the standings in the East.
Right.
And, you know, they're not going to win the Atlantic. They're probably, if they make the playoffs, they're going to be a wild card team. But they could be a wild card team that ends up being like LA in 2010 or whatever. I think it was 2010. 2012. Where they come in eighth place and
boom. LA. So 2012 was an interesting year. Vancouver won the President's Trophy for the second year in a row, played LA in the first round, and LA took them out in the first round. So, and it was a shock to us as Canuck fans.
Yeah.
And then they ended up winning the cup. So, I mean, it makes sense that they ended up going to win the cup after taking out the number one team. But yeah, it's definitely, they have been, I wouldn't say consistently good, but they've been decent for a long time, the LA Kings have. So it's interesting to kind of see them almost coming up to another upswing right now after a little bit of a rebuild over the past couple of years.
I think with a lot of teams, it's obviously still a little early in the season. We're approaching the quarter mark of the season, but I think with a lot of teams, you really start to get an idea of where teams are really going to start placing, mm-hmm. Kind of around that Christmas break, right after Christmas break. If we're looking at our Canadian teams, we're looking at like the Leafs, the Flames, Canucks, Canadians, all that. Do we have an idea of where we think the teams might be right at Christmas?
Well, I'll tell you something. I've been a little surprised about the Canadians this year so far. I knew they weren't going to be, you know, the best team, but I didn't realize they were going to be as bad as they have been this year.
Dog crap.
It's been a little surprising, I'll admit. With the kind of players they have, it just seems to me like they should be better than they are.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible.
I just mean, and I'm not saying I'm sad about it. I just mean, like, ultimately, like, it just surprises me a little bit. Much like you're surprised about the Senators, right? Like, the way the Senators are coming up. It just seems a bit strange to me that they are where they are. I have a follow-up question when it comes to the whole Senators thing. Do you think that an injury would affect the Senators negatively big time?
I'm not sure that I do. I honestly just think that Travis Green has them playing as a unit. Yeah. Throughout their entire lineup, the effort level is there every shift. They make bad decisions. I tell you, I was terrified for Shabbat the other night. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to be out again. The way he got hit, I think it was his shoulder. Yep. And he's off and he's wincing and he went off right away, kind of leaned over as he was skating the bench, and I thought, oh no, not again. I mean, whatever, it's the Ottawa Senators. I don't really give a crap, but at the same time,
as a hockey fan,
for that player, you're like, this guy's been through a lot, right?
Yeah, if you look at a guy like Tim Stützle too, if he goes down, right, that's going to change
that's why I asked that question, because I thought, you know, Stützle being one of the better players on the team, the guy's carrying the team right now.
Yeah, quite literally.
It seems to me like that would affect them in a really big way. Because I've seen that happen before, where one player goes down and all of a sudden the team just forgets how to play hockey, right?
Albeit, you could look at the Leafs right now with Matthews being out, and they've actually played good without him out.
They did that last year too, didn't they?
Yeah.
I feel like
every time he's not in the lineup, they play well.
They play really well, right?
Yeah. They all seem to show up.
For stretches, anyway.
Yeah, of course. If we're looking at the Canadian teams right now, looking at the Atlantic, so we're looking at Christmas right now, where we're kind of expecting the team to be. Toronto right now is in second place in the Atlantic. Florida is in first, has a game on hand. Where would you expect to see Toronto by Christmas?
I don't think there's going to be much change by Christmas, to be honest with you. Like, I think I know where my Canadian teams are going to rank by the end of the year. But by Christmas, I don't think there's going to be much change with Toronto specifically.
Sure. Yeah, with Toronto, I'm with Brandon. I feel like it's going to be very similar. If they're not first in the division, they're probably around second for sure.
Okay. Same with the Atlantic. Ottawa Senators are in fourth right now with an 8-7-1 record. Do we see any change by Christmas?
I would like to say I think they're going to stay right where they are also, yeah.
I think I see an improvement. I think that they might even surpass Tampa.
Perfect. We have Canadians at the bottom of the division, eighth with a 5-10-2 in record. Do you see them moving up?
How many teams are in the league? 32?
Okay, we're talking division. Let's talk division.
I think they're going to be 33rd.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
-1 on the No, I agree. I think that Montreal is probably, this is the team you're going to get for the rest of the year. Unless they make some moves or something to make something happen, but I don't see a point in it.
I don't think St. Louis is the guy. I don't think Slavkovsky, holy cow, the guy they picked the other year, I don't think that he's panning out to be anything close to what they thought he was going to be. They seem to have the opportunity to draft well, but don't seem to draft well.
Hey, if they're looking at trading Cole Caulfield, I will take him on my team. 100%.
Talking won't.
That's true too, actually. Yeah, it's a good point.
Losing Laine was pretty big for them too.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. We will give you that.
Moving over to the Western Conference, we do have the Jets in first with the best record in the league. Any changes?
By Christmas?
Yeah.
This is the tricky part, because I don't think so by Christmas, but I do have a prediction for the end of the year.
Yeah, like, honestly, the Jets, this winning streak that they're on right now is going to give them a nice little cushion for quite some time. Now, currently, they're number one in the league. I'm not sure that's going to stick. That being said, if they can, you know, play even a third of what they're playing now and get the goals that they're getting, you just never know. They could end up with the President's Trophy by Christmas. I don't know. It's funny. They could end up going on a cold streak. It does happen. I mean, look what happened to the Blues the year they won the Cup. They started winning all of a sudden, you know, in January, and then boom, they're
right before the All-Star.
Yeah,
right?
And then they just barely made the playoffs, and then they win the Cup. So it's you know, anything can happen.
I foresee them holding it the whole year. They're just too complete of a team to me to move the radar.
Well, then let me ask you this question. Does an injury affect them negatively like I mentioned with the Ottawa Senators?
I think the only player that could really, really affect them is Hellebuck going down.
Yep. Oh, I was going to say Connor.
No.
Connor, to me, is the life force of that team.
Oh,
so,
I disagree.
So the way I'm seeing it is that Connor is the energy of the team. So he's bringing the offense with him. So without him, in my mind, they're not scoring the goals that they're scoring. Hellebuck, yes, is backstopping them like you wouldn't believe, but I think that can only take you so far.
Just consider who's next in line, right? And that's why I say Hellebuck. You take Hellebuck out, your goaltending is taking a downgrade significantly at that point.
You're absolutely right. But that the same can be said on any team, that's right? True.
There isn't a goaltender in the world better than Hellebuck, and I'm not sure there's a goaltender that close to Hellebuck.
Yeah.
Okay, moving our way over to the Pacific Division. We'll make a stop here in Alberta. Looking at the Oilers.
Who stops in Alberta? Right to BC.
Freedom. Anyway.
Oilers are 8-7-1 in fifth place. By Christmas, what are we looking at?
Okay, I have to take off my biased hat for a second. Okay, so let's look at the Oilers, who are 8-7-1.
Where are they in the standings right now?
Fifth.
They're fifth in the division.
Pacific, yeah.
I would like to say that they stay there and maybe go down. I just don't see it. I think they're probably going to be third in the division by Christmas. Calgary will probably be fifth. And LA is fourth. In my mind.
Kind of a flip-flop almost?
Well, not LA. Let me rephrase. I think Vegas ends up being fourth and Vancouver ends up being second.
Oh, wow. That's a big jump.
So I just predicted three Canadian teams for you in that order.
Who's one then?
One will be probably Los Angeles. That's my prediction.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be... I don't... Honestly, Christmas is 10 games away.
Yeah, it's
I don't think there's going to be much swing in 10 games, to be honest with you. But no, I don't. I think Edmonton kind of stays where they are.
And part of the reason I brought Christmas Ray is where you actually do tend to start seeing a change and where teams are a little more cemented at that point in terms of where they're going to be. That's why I brought up Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's roster freezes, there's deadlines,
there's also
waiver
trades.
Wire. Yeah, of course. There's lots of factors, right?
And I say trades because that's what Vancouver is known for, especially last year. They had their deadline trades done by Christmas.
Yeah,
Saturday. So yeah, it's interesting kind of to see what happens, but it, you know, judging by how they play even now in November, you know, Vancouver I'm speaking of, that decision could be made now as to who they're going to go after. So
what about Flames and Canucks for you?
I think Vancouver will move up the division for sure. The Flames will kind of stay stagnant.
They'll flame out, if you will.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with a bit of an outlier here. I'm going to say the Oilers are going to be at the top. Canucks will be second, the Flames will be third. I'm going with all three.
Wow. So you think the Flames are going to get strong? I mean, now, are you looking at this as a biased Flames fan, or are you looking at this sort of in a logical sense?
Logical sense in the fact that you don't necessarily see it in terms of paper that the Flames have a balanced lineup, but they actually do have quite the balanced lineup.
I mean, Wolf is a great goalie.
Yep. Vladar's been playing really good this year, too. I believe that they're, as far as I know, their schedule coming up is a little bit lighter, too, so that's going to help them move a little bit. Yeah. Canucks are consistent. That's why I see them obviously moving up as well. Oilers, to me, are the Oilers. They kind of just seem to turn it on at the right time. And
it's funny because, I would argue they don't turn it on at the right time. They're just streaky.
Yeah.
Like some games they just seem to have it and some games they don't. And they've always been that way, though, right? Like because they rely so heavily on Draisaitl and McDavid that it's like some days when they don't have it, it's because Drysdale and McDavid don't have it. You know, like their defense is suspect a lot of times.
A lot of times, yeah.
especially with guys like Darnell Nurse, who makes the money he makes. And we've made this argument in the past, but you know, Evan Bouchard is not a consistent player. He's a good player, but he's not consistent. So, you know, for me, I just think the negative, because not because I hate the Oilers, but because I just feel like I don't have the confidence in them that I do say LA or Vegas. You know what I mean?
Yep, I know what you mean. Yeah, like I said, it's an outlier in terms of my decision making on that, but I see little cues that could make me believe that there could be that kind of a setup by Christmas at this point. Even if it's 10 games, like 10 games can make a big difference in the standings.
All right, gentlemen, we've talked a lot about hockey. I think it's time we just talk a little bit about some other sports that are happening. One of them in particular that I know we've talked about in the past. You guys don't know a lot about the CFL, Canadian Football League, but we are about to have the Grey Cup, which is the championship match in the CFL. So I want to talk a little bit about the playoffs, just to sort of run down what's happened over this season. It's been a disappointing season for us BC Lion fans, unfortunately. This was the season that we thought we had a real chance to make the Grey Cup, because it's in Vancouver. The Grey Cup is this weekend as we record this this podcast. BC ended up finishing with a 9-9 record, which is kind of middle of the line. Just making the playoffs, basically, and then they ended up losing the first game of the playoffs, which was against Saskatchewan. So it was unfortunate, but it's the way it goes. The team that has been consistent in terms of top of the league every year, Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They ended up finishing the season with an 11-7 record, 11 wins, 7 losses, which is top of the league. Which is second in the league. Top of the league was the Montreal Alouettes with a 12-5 record. Very impressive for them this year, because when you consider the fact that Winnipeg's always at the top of the heap, they're the team that's, they're like what we would call the Florida Panthers of the CFL, because they're in it every year. Well, Florida in this case 2 years in a row, but you know, that's kind of what the way you look at it. It was an unfortunate season so far for the BC Lions. We really thought with having Nathan Rourke come back that he was going to be able to turn it on and make what happened in 2022 happen again this year, and hopefully bring him to the Grey Cup. But that didn't happen, unfortunately.
You were so excited about him coming back.
I was, yeah. And it was so, you know, I ended up going to his first game. My dad and I went to the game, and it was really disappointing to sort of, not that first game wasn't disappointing. I was actually excited with him, even though he wasn't the same player he was in 2022, keeping in mind, of course, the guy hadn't played a full football game in 2 years. So even when he went to the NFL, he wasn't playing full football games. He played a couple of preseason games, but those preseason games were like, you get to play a quarter. You get to play a quarter. You get to play a quarter. And that's how they were sort of testing out all their quarterbacks and stuff. So it was really unfortunate. You know, this season was an unfortunate one for Lions fans. But we have the Grey Cup coming in here this weekend. And it is the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, of course, playing against the Toronto Argonauts. I'm going to predict that the Argonauts take this one. Only because I don't want Winnipeg to win. Winnipeg wins all the freaking time. I have friends who are diehard Winnipeg fans. We have a friend
We
have a mutual friend who's a Winnipeg Blue Bombers fan. And I, you know, for his sake, you know, I'd be happy for him if they won. But I am rooting for the Toronto Argonauts to win this.
Shout
one.
Out to our boy Frankie.
Yeah, hey Frankie.
I wonder if he's going this weekend. Actually,
I'm sure he is.
Yeah, he
I'm
must sure he is. Be.
I have another friend who's a Winnipeg fan as well, and so our buddy Frankie, he's got Lions season tickets, so he goes to every single Lions game. But when it's against the Blue Bombers, he's always a Blue Bombers fan, right? So
he's from Thompson, Manitoba. So yeah. Just yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. Toronto won it a couple of years ago against Winnipeg. I'm sure Winnipeg's thinking we've got to win this one to exact that revenge. But the Grey Cup is always a super fun event. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but the way it works, basically, it's a party for about a week. They have all these different events throughout the whole week, and they host it in different cities every year, right? So this year is in Vancouver. I was living in Vancouver in 2011. when they had it in Vancouver again. And that year, BC ended up going to the Grey Cup, and they won it that year. So it was really exciting.
2011 was a big year, eh?
Yeah.
Holy smokes for Vancouver.
It was. It was really a huge year in Vancouver. And of course, following 2010, which was also a big year in Vancouver too, with the Olympics. So yeah, it's always a good time. Big parties. They used to do a thing called the Vanier Cup, which is the university kind of championship game. They would do it like I think it was either the night before the Grey Cup or a couple of nights before. In 2011, I went to the Vanier Cup. I got tickets to the Vanier Cup and got to watch that. And that was some really fun football to watch too. And it was for the championship. So I don't think they do that anymore, though. I think they do the Vanier Cup on a different time now. So. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, as disappointing as I was to see the Lions lose to the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the first round, it's going to be an interesting sort of Grey Cup to watch. And in case you guys didn't know, the Jonas Brothers are going to be doing the halftime show.
It's funny you say that. I was just looking up the history of the halftime shows.
Yeah.
And because, obviously, the Jonas Brothers aren't Canadian, generally, they have Canadian acts, not maybe necessarily headlining, but as part of the show. And last year, they didn't have a Canadian band either. They had Green Day.
Yeah.
But I mean, up to that, they've had the Arkells, the Lumineers, Alessia Cara, Shania Twain.
Imagine Dragons.
What's that?
Imagine Dragons.
Imagine Dragons. Before that, I think Headley, Marianas Trench, Carly Rae Jepsen, Justin Bieber, Gordon Lightfoot, like some iconic music people, right? And
yeah.
It's interesting when I heard the Jonas Brothers, I was like, really?
Well, I think a lot of it actually comes down to the fact that Amar Doman, who is the owner of the BC Lions, it was his responsibility to basically get the act for the halftime show. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but every year for the last 3 years now, they've had a concert to open the season. And so this year, I believe they had 50 Cent, if I remember correctly. And, last season it was LL Cool J was one of these. I think it was last year was LL Cool J. So this year was 50 Cent. Last year was LL Cool J.
Is it 2001?
Or 1998?
And then the year before last was the One Republic. So, and that was a really good show when the first year. So, they've actually, all three have been really, really good shows, really fun shows. And so that's kind of what has sort of been the thing now with the CFL is doing these concerts to draw fans in and get them excited about football again. And it's working. It's brought people back to come watch BC Lions football again. So we're really hoping that this is a good off season for BC. But, before that, of course, we've got the Grey Cup this Sunday and, it's going to be, by the time people are listening to this podcast, we'll already know who won the Grey Cup, and maybe we'll already know what's happened in the CFL in terms of off-season moves and stuff, so it'll be kind of interesting.
Well, I'm a major Stampeders fan, obviously living in Calgary for a good portion of time. I know.
Sorry,
I love that. I know you love it. Come on, Stampeders are great. I was brought up watching the Argos with my dad, so I'm an Argos guy for the Grey Cup, too.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you're rooting for the Argos, too, then?
I am.
Okay. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Gentlemen, we are coming down to the point now where we got to talk a little bit about some entertainment. Let's talk a little bit about our favorite movie music, because we all talk about music all the time.
I was
gonna single Paul out, but actually all three of us love music and
all different kinds too,
and we love movies. So let's talk a little bit about our favorite music from movies. Brando, let's go with three here. Yeah. What's your number three?
Yeah, okay. What I'll do after I name mine, I want to see if you guys sense a bit of a theme. You probably will.
There's usually a theme with Brando.
There's usually a theme with me. My number three favorite soundtrack, Dazed and Confused.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'll just kind of maybe mention some of the big hits from that. I'm not as much of a score guy as I am like actual songs that are played. For me, music triggers memories. And although, the classics like the theme from Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, all these things they're just amazing, right? But for me, it's the song that you know that hits at the certain time in the movie or the certain scene or the certain lead up to what's going to happen that just goes, yeah, that's the one. That's exactly the right pick for that time.
You have a joint? Be a lot cooler if you did.
All right. I'll just name a couple of the big hits from this one, and we'll move on to Paul. I would say Tush, ZZ Top.
What a great song. Just one of those things you got to tap your, snap your fingers, tap your feet every time you hear it. Cherry Bomb by the Runaways, kind of a classic.
Cherry Bomb.
The one song that I looked forward to hearing every single year on this day, that was the last day of school, and that's School's Out by Alice Cooper. Fox on the Run by a Canadian band named Sweet.
Yes.
And probably your dad's favorite band, a song called Love Hurts by Nazareth.
Yeah, I grew up with that song, man.
Yeah. So that's my number three, Dazed and Confused.
I've actually never seen that movie.
Haven't seen it in a very long time.
I find that surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking at my number three, this should be no surprise to anyone, considering the movie was in my top, one of my top movies. The Inception soundtrack, or score, from that movie, to me, was one of the selling points of that movie, besides the story, the acting, and you know, just the overall theme of the movie. I found the different music they played at different points of the movie like really emphasized the, you know, that those parts of the movie. The Mombasa part where Lee is trying to escape from the company that's, you know, ticked at him for not getting the secrets that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, very fast-paced portion of the movie. The dream is collapsing. That's, you know, right at the very beginning of the film. That's where you have like the horn music coming in, where, you know, like I said, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character has just woken up, and you have all this like this trumpet music happening. That's while the dream is collapsing, and Lee is trying to get the secrets from those pages that he's looking at. To me, one of my absolute all-time favorite music in movies is the very last song of the end movie, Time.
Yeah.
It really just emphasizes for Thomas Cobb's character, getting back to his family. And just, you know, it's slow and sullen, but, you know, it kind of ends with kind of almost, not like a bang, but that climax where he's home and you're excited and you're happy. And then just kind of a little dip at the end with the whole thimble spinning out there.
Time, isn't that a song by Enya?
There's a few songs called Time. Imagine Dragons have a song called Time as well.
They do.
So my number three is from a movie that comes from 1995, and this movie is called Hackers.
Nice.
not exactly the best movie, although I love it. It's a great movie, but in terms of, like, you know, dated, it's definitely dated. However, the soundtrack is wonderful. When you listen to the soundtrack, I mean, the song Voodoo People by The Prodigy, one of my favorite Prodigy songs. And then there is actually another song by, it's called On and On, and back in the 90s, it played on almost any movie. Is sort of like it was like a denouement type song. Like you know, you would hear it at the end of a movie, kind of like almost to make you feel like, okay, all is well, you know, like that kind of thing. But this movie played it at the beginning of the movie, kind of get things set up and everything. But it's a fun little, you know, like I said, very dated movie. Like the technology does not make any sense, but it's a fun movie, like I said. So that's my number three. Brando, number two.
I don't think you guys are going to even remember this movie, but I'm curious to see. 2003, Cuba Gooding Jr., Ed Harris, Radio.
Ooh.
Do you remember that movie?
I
love that movie.
So I just love, there's certain parts of the movie. It's one of those things, again, where it's like, you know, there's a key game and it's like they're down at half, and it's a football movie, by the way, for people that haven't seen it.
Yeah.
They're down at halftime by, you know, say whatever, two touchdowns, and they come out and all of a sudden China Grove by the Doobie Brothers hits, you know.
I love that song. I mean, I said movie.
Yeah. It's just one of those times and instances in the movie where it hits home and you're like, yeah, all right. It kind of pumps you up. Right. But I mean, a couple of other songs from that soundtrack that really hit me is We're an American Band by Grand Funk Railroad. Another great song. If You Don't Know Me by Now, Harold Melvin, kind of one of those old school Motown songs. Joe and I were humming this earlier. You probably wondered where I got it from, but That Lady by the Isley Brothers.
Yep.
Who's that lady?
Who's that lady?
Lovely. And another big one on that one is Stevie Wonder's We Can Work It Out. You know, just such a collection of songs. There's 20, 30 songs on there that you may not... One of those soundtracks where you look at it and you go, I'm not sure if I know this song. But then you listen to it and you're like, oh, that song.
And then you try to pinpoint where you remember it from in
totally,
the movie.
Right, totally, yeah, yeah, 100%. That's why.
That is a good number two for sure. Paul, what's your number two?
So my number two is another score-related soundtrack. I loved dragons growing up as a kid. They were just always so mystifying to me. You know, I read The Hobbit and
they should be mystifying. They're not real.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you.
She's dreams.
Sorry, buddy.
Though.
In case you didn't know.
Stupid dragons.
You just ruined my future trip.
But yeah, like I said, obviously first introduced to dragons even with reading The Hobbit and Smaug. Yeah. So the movie I'm talking about is Dragonheart, Sean Connery voicing the dragon.
I forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was 96, so I would have been 13 at the time. I was a teenager, but I absolutely loved the film. Mm-hmm. Part of what made the film so gripping for me was the music as well. There's a couple of different soundtracks in it. There's one called To the Stars. It's kind of the main kind of theme for the movie in terms of it has like violins, it's got strings playing, it's got some of the wind instruments playing, and it really kind of emphasizes Draco's importance in the movie, the Draco being the dragon. So To the Stars is one of those ones that I can listen to that and just feel relaxed because it's such a beautiful sound and soundtrack. There's another soundtrack in it called Flight to Avalon, and that's where him and his comrades have been picked up and being flown to Avalon by Draco. And again, it's just a, you know, you can feel the fact that none of them have ever flown before, and they're kind of being taken to this mystical place, Avalon, and get be introduced to King Arthur in terms of a kind of a spiritual awakening that Bowen had. And then the finale song, which kind of ties in with To the Stars, it has kind of the same strings and wind kind of instruments happening, and obviously has to do with one of the characters kind of going at that point, and you know, the importance that that character had on everyone. The music really emphasized that for me.
Nice.
I'll never forget that movie because of that soundtrack.
Nice. That's pretty sweet. My number two, and I'm sure you guys will agree with me on this because everybody does, The Matrix, the original Matrix. Nice. the soundtrack in this movie is incredible, first of all. And it actually introduced me to Rage Against the Machine when I first saw this movie. But not only them, but like Rob Zombie, Dragula. There's a Deftones song called My Own Summer, which is an incredible song. There's also a Prodigy song in there as well called Minefields, which is really good. The movie is great. Another dated movie if you really think about it, but it does hold up, I feel like.
I can't come to terms with that, saying that movie's dated, right? Even me, being the youngest out of the three of us, I'm kind of like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, 99, it was so 25 years ago.
Yeah, and honestly, like, when you think about it, the only reason it's dated is just basically the CG that they used back then versus now, right?
Which was groundbreaking, of course.
At the time, it was. It was incredible, especially the stop-motion style of like filming and all. We can get into that in another podcast, but ultimately, like, the soundtrack is something that sticks out in my mind as my number two.
100%.
Number one, Brando.
All right. So my number one is not only one of the most iconic movies of all time, obviously I think it's probably the most iconic soundtrack of all time. This has a combination of score and actual songs, and I remember, I don't know if it was the year after it came out, so that would have been 95, so I think I was in grade 4 at that time. It is one of those times where subscriptions started to kind of take off. Mm-hmm. My dad had a subscription to like Columbia Music, where you could get Columbia House to get CDs, right? You get 10 movies or 10 CDs for $40 and then you get 10 free or whatever it is, right?
I remember my brother had a subscription to Columbia House when I was a kid. And it was back when they had cassettes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So cassette, you'd get all these cassettes for a specific price. So funny. And $40, by the way, you're way overshooting.
Yeah.
It was like $10 for 10 CDs. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
So, and I think I remember when I graduated grade 3, I got the soundtrack to Dumb and Dumber.
Nice.
The very next year, I got a Swiss Army Knife and the soundtrack to this movie, Forrest Gump.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Now, I know that incredible. There's an incredible amount of songs in here, but I literally do want to highlight some. There's probably not one that you guys don't know.
Right.
Hound Dog.
Yeah.
Elvis Presley, right? Rebel Rouser. You may not recognize that, but you'd know it to hear
it. I know it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's the one where he's in the football field running. Yeah. Anyway. Yep. Land of a Thousand Dances. Mm-hmm. Wilson yep. Pickett. Fortunate Son.
Yeah.
Creedence Clearwater. You know. I Can't Help Myself. Respect.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, quick tidbit. Did you know that Aretha Franklin did not write that song?
I did know that. I learned that.
Otis Redding.
Yeah.
Oh, actually wrote that song. Yeah.
Cool.
Bob Dylan had a couple of songs in this one. Rainy Day Women, Blowing in the Wind, which actually was Joan Baez performed it. But California Dreamin', yeah. Mamas and Papas, yeah. For What It's Worth, that's Buffalo Springfield. Break On Through to the Other Side.
They did such a good job in that movie with bringing out the era like yeah, of the yeah. music. So like when he was in a specific decade, it's like this is the hit song, but it also told the story really well.
Yeah.
It did.
Like I think of the specific scene, and I'm not gonna give any spoilers away, but I think of a specific scene where the character Jenny is in a hotel room and you're listening to The Doors, and just what she's going through is very, you know, that song is very like mirroring what she's going through, and it was perfect for the actual era that she was in.
Hadn't really thought about it that way, but wow, does that ever make sense?
Right?
Because I know the song yeah. you're referring
exactly.
to, right?
Yeah.
Couple other ones, and then I'll kind of turn it over. But Turn, Turn, Turn by the Byrds.
Oh yeah.
You know, a '60s classic. Joy to the World, Three Dog Night. Everybody knows that one.
Yep.
Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah.
Running on Empty. Jackson yep. Brown. Yep. Like it's really endless, to be honest.
It's probably, it's definitely warranting of a number one pick,
yeah.
for sure.
And I think the coolest thing about it for me at the time was that I got two CDs.
Yeah.
It was a two-disc soundtrack.
That's cool. Right? Yeah, that's cool. And that's probably one of the reasons why you appreciate that music, you know, now, considering being presented with it at such a young age and yeah. also getting to listen to it and just kind of like really feel it, you know?
Yeah. So I got to ask you guys real quick, do you see a theme with my three?
Yeah.
Days of Confused, Radio, and Forrest yeah. Gump? They're all basically based in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. yeah.
They're all kind of historical movies, and it, yeah. just,
100%.
It just fits. Kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with you at all. All right, Paul, what do you got?
So my top soundtrack, Brandon will absolutely enjoy and love. It's one of James Gunn's best films. You could probably go with all three of them, but I'll go kind of with the first two because the first two volumes kind of interconnect, and that's the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2.
Mm. Yes, King!
it was the soundtrack, like the movie that introduced me to Come and Get Your Love. I love that song. I'll sing that at karaoke, but it's, you know, you watch Chris Pratt's character in the very beginning of the film, you know, dancing away to that that song as he's trying to get to one of the Infinity
yeah.
Stones.
Yeah.
It brings you right into the movie right away. And
it's hard not to dance along to that.
This big freaking banner, Guardians of the Galaxy, with that song playing. It's just, it's so much fun.
It gave it a resurgence.
Yeah, totally.
It's
totally.
One of those songs everybody had forgotten about twice.
Totally.
And then all of a sudden it's like, wow.
That's kind of what movies do with music, right? Yep. Like, you see a movie and you go, I forgot about that song, right? Like, it's it happens a lot.
And a lot of, like I said, a lot of bangers on this, right? Hooked on a Feeling, Spirit in the Sky,
mm-hmm.
Moonage Daydream. I've always loved I Want You Back by Jackson 5. Michael yep. Jackson, Jackson 5 were my favorites for a long time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Ooh, Child. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Like, mm-hmm. you can't go wrong with that very first soundtrack. And then, again, you're obviously going into the second, and it's just as good. You have Mr. Blue Sky starts off the movie. Fox on the Run, you mentioned in one of your favorites. The chain for the trailer, and then having it be the main focus of music throughout the film, like mm-hmm. totally made Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that much more fun than the first one was. And the first one was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Nights, yeah, great film. Father and Son at the very end of the film,
yeah.
Emphasizing what happened with him and Yondu.
Yeah,
I can't say enough about both the soundtracks. I know it's two, But they really do interconnect, yeah, right? Yeah. And it has to with the type
that's
of
a
artists.
Theme. That's a theme for Paul. He likes to pick two movies for his choice. Specifically when he's talking about the MCU. Yeah, but anyway. MCU.
Hey, man, what's the matter with you?
And, of course, Sam Cooke and Bring It On Home to Me.
Yeah. Oh, so, man. You know, we talked a lot about this before we started recording, and we were talking about like what we were going to do. Originally, we were going to say this is our top favorite soundtracks. But we agreed that we were going to call it our top music because my first choice is actually not a specific soundtrack. It's actually a score, a specific score or a song specific to a movie. But it's what I would consider one of the most kind of memorable songs. When I think of it, it gives me goosebumps. When I hear it, it makes me excited and giddy. And you know, I can compare it with, say, like the Star Wars theme song, but that's not the song I'm choosing. The song I'm choosing is the Superman theme song.
Ah. And I'm like, come on, man, you're killing me here. Let's go.
The reason behind it is I grew up a huge Superman fan. I remember being a little kid watching the Christopher Reeve Superman with my dad and just... It just made me feel like I could do that. That could be me.
You're in awe of the character.
I would
right?
wear a cape. I would run around the house wearing my red boots, and just that was me as a little kid.
Tidy Reddies.
I remember going to the movie theater to see Superman. And you're gonna think this is hilarious, but going to see Superman Returns, which is the one with Brandon Routh, and it's the first time I'd seen a Superman movie in a theater. Okay.
Oh, cool.
Because you consider the Superman movies that I'd seen were all Christopher Reeves, so I was a kid when these movies came out.
Yeah, me too.
And we didn't have a movie theater in my town growing up, so for me it was watching, you know, a VHS version or whatever. So I get to go see the Brandon Routh version of Superman Returns, which, again, not the best movie in the world. However, the moment I heard the Warner Brothers soundtrack, you know, the Warner Brothers... and then you hear just no, that's not that's the Superman theme song. The Warner Brothers one, which is like I think that's actually not Warner Brothers. Anyways, I'm not going to promote them. Here we go. When you hear their soundtrack and they have the just a little tinge of in their sound in their intro thing for the Warner Brothers logo, and then it fades out, and then you hear dun dun dun. Dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Dun dun dun. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it right now. And then just that dun 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 dun. And it's just like, yes! It just like made me feel so excited to see this movie.
Yeah.
And it made me sad that they never used the song in the newer Superman movies. Because that, to me, epitomizes Superman. That song epitomizes Superman. And that is what a song should do for a character, for a movie. To me, that is my number one when I think of soundtrack, when I think of song for a movie, representative of a movie. To me, that is it.
As a little kid, Superman 3 was one of my favorites.
I feel like that was really impassioned.
Well
right?
done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. But like honestly, when I think about it, that's it. Like, because I feel that way about Star Wars too. But I've seen the Star Wars movies in theaters. I've gone back and seen them, and it's very exciting every time I hear it. But the Superman, because I've only heard it the one time, seeing Superman Returns, I went back after seeing the movie one time and knowing how bad that movie was. Again, it's not a great movie, but I went back to see it in a bigger theater to listen to that sound one more time to get that feeling, because that's what it does to me.
Well, I was just saying, like, Superman 3 did that for me, and, like, hearing that was one of my favorite movies as a kid. Yep. Richard Pryor was great in it.
Oh,
but,
he was awesome.
You know, like, the different dynamics that Superman went through in that film, too, where he was good, bad, you know, good again, having, you know, losing his powers, getting his powers back, all those kind of things. It was just one of those theme songs. As soon as he came on, you're like, oh, I'm so excited, it's Superman, and I remember that as a kid. It was great.
It does. It builds you up. It gives me goosebumps now thinking about it because I remember that feeling.
I felt the same way about Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow.
Yes, that's probably the most singing we've ever done on this podcast.
It's not going to be the most.
We'll do a karaoke one.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that the way it made me feel, that's why I chose it as a song specific to my choices, because that's it. I feel it in my heart. Like, that is the one sort of song that I can think about that really makes me emotional when I think about it.
And that point in the song when it hits and you just want to put your hand up in the air. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. Oh, man. Such a great score. That score was written by John Williams, who, of course, is the same person who wrote the Star Wars theme song and score. So it makes sense you'd get the same emotional kind of feeling behind both. But
Indiana Jones, too, I think.
That's right.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you think about the way those songs make you feel. And, like, for me, that Superman song is so close to home just because of the fact that I grew up being such a fan of the character and wanting to be Superman. That was the hero I wanted to be when I was a kid. So, yeah, it definitely has that emotional feel for me. Well, gentlemen, after all that emotional talk, I'm ready to call it quits.
I'm hungry.
I thought we had a pretty good show today.
Yeah, it was great. Lots of good stuff happening all the time with us, and I really appreciate you guys and being a part of this with me and, you know, us being able to share this each week and then, you know, in turn, share it with our listeners as well.
Absolutely.
I think our dynamics are fun. I think our audience will definitely keep enjoying that as we keep pumping stuff out for them. And again, as I've mentioned before in previous episodes, you know, reach out to us, let us know what you want us to talk about, because we want to connect with you guys too.
Yeah, that's right. We're on X, formerly Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on TikTok. We got lots of fun videos on TikTok. We're also on YouTube. You can also catch us on Spotify and other streaming media for podcasts. So make sure you guys comment, give us a little, any type of suggestions you have. If you want us to even talk about specific ideas, things you want us to discuss, please let us know and we'll
specifically check out our TikToks at the Puck and Pod. We have some fun doing them. They're silly, but we love it. We're having a good time.
That's right. All right. Well, for this episode, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.